So this is going to be the final talk of this retreat, except for the closing ceremony tomorrow, which will be a Dharma talk, unlike you've heard here so far this weekend. It's a Dharma talk we'll all give together. I've been really touched both in the Dokusan and also in questions and like that by people really struggling with how to respond to this very troubling, violent, destructive time in a way that allows our practice to be actualized so that our life can really meet this time properly without getting trapped by what's going on. It's so easy to get trapped in reaction, but reaction shouldn't be driving the car. Sincere foundation should be at the source of the actions we take, and yet it's so easy to get caught, as you all know. So easy. So Renee asked the question, so, you know, fanning the fan, okay, of course a fan is a fan, but, you know, what does that actually mean for us? And this is really what everyone has been talking about. How do I fan the fan, given what's going on here, without fanning the flames, basically? This is a big question. So I thought I'd like to address that from a certain kind of angle. And of course, this involves studying of the self, which in Genjo Koan, a Dogen is so clear that we must do. And there are so many ways for us to study the self. And you know this from your sincere practice in general and from your sincere practice here at the retreat. And our study includes becoming very, very intimate with the subtle quality of our minds, especially during Zazen. We become very intimate with that. I mean, there's no one's getting up and running for their lives, even if you're doing it mentally, because we have the practice, we come back. And of course, this doesn't mean just to become, to think about our minds, but it means to become intimate with them by really letting ourselves be with them as a loving companion, because our minds are so distraught so often and so distracted so often and so confused so often. They really need a true companion. And I think deep in our hearts, we all want to have a true companion, and we all want to be a true companion to someone. And we're a good person to start with, as far as I'm concerned. And as you know, Dogen teaches in this very chapter that when we fully engage body and mind, that means when we fully become intimate with body and mind, then we can intuit Dharma truly and completely. We can intuit Dharma intimately, as he said. And that means that we can touch reality. We can touch the truth. Because it's right here. And we're no longer pushing it away or running away from it. And that's important. We want that. We want to know. Everyone is here because in some way or other, I mean, forgive me for presuming, but we want to know what life really is. Not, some description of life, but deep at the core of what we truly are, we want to know what life is, because we want to be that life and not just be a sort of android copy, which, you know, I don't have a television, but if you watch TV, there's nothing but support for being an android copy of what life is. And we want to know what life is without being hindered by anything, and that includes our misunderstanding. So we want to have real understanding. And that's part of what the study of the self and the study of mind is. And so in Zazen, we naturally, just as a matter of the process, we naturally become very sensitive to the every single little nuance in the quality of our mind. Because as we watch our mind, we see it veers a little this way, it veers a little that way. We get an email or we get a letter or something like that, and all of a sudden we get lost in the story of something. Or we're just sitting there, and we're sitting really quiet and still, and all of a sudden we notice, oh, I'm over here now. I don't even know how that happened. But the point is we notice. And that alone is a radical act. Just noticing that, being with our mind so clearly and so profoundly that we notice. And that's what our practice helps us do. I've mentioned Dainin Katagiri Roshi. Dainin means great patience. And he was a Zen master that I loved to practice with, and Shirley and I loved to when we had the opportunity to. And he told us once that the Dainin means great patience. He's very impatient. So he said, my teacher named me Dainin. Great patience. Great problem. Very good. So anyway, in one of his teachings, he said something that is, I just feel is so important and so deeply interesting to me, and I hope to you. And I think it's also so challenging that I want to look at it as part of our study. And Roshi said that, I'm not sure I ever heard anyone say this so clearly. He said that the meaning of ignorance, we all talk about ignorance, you know. Roshi said, the meaning of ignorance from which all of our suffering flows is that the mind moves. Can you hear that? The meaning of ignorance is that the mind moves. It's that subtle. And he goes on to say that ignorance is the origin of karma, which means cause and effect, you know, an action. Right? So the mind moves, and there's some kind of cause and effect as a result of that movement of the mind. And he says, I want to read it, he says, mind moves and life begins based on ignorance before we are conscious of it. This is so subtle. Is it clear? Mind moves and life begins based on, mind moves and life begins based on ignorance before we are conscious of it. So there's movement of the mind. That's like putting the key in the ignition and starting up the car, right? That's the movement of the mind. And then there's stepping on the gas. And that's called acting based on ignorance. And that's where the cycle of karma starts to have its effect outside of our minds alone. In the world. So that's like, then the car starts to drive. Mind moves, okay. Maybe we notice or not. He says, even before we're aware of it, and then we hit the gas. And then we have something called climate change. Or, I don't even like that phrase, then we have climate disaster. The change is just so polite. I don't like it. We have climate disaster as a result of this. So let's look into it more. Roshi says that the movement of the mind is a very minute vibration. It's that subtle, just a minute vibration that happens before we're aware of it. So when I thought about that phrase, that's his phrase, minute vibration, I thought it could be like just the slightest shiver in the mind, or just a little tremble of the mind, or just a little wobble. That's it. And when that happens, a minute separation from stillness and wholeness and oneness takes place. That minute separation is the beginning of what Roshi says is the energy that creates ignorance that leads to karma. That wobble off that direct place. That's how he's describing it. So when that happens, this separation from stillness or oneness takes place. And that movement of the mind and the separation it causes is what Katagiri Roshi calls ignorance. This is very subtle, very fine thinking based on his lifetime of practice. So just, you know, we try to take it in. Judith kindly mentioned a poem that I wrote in that 100 Butterflies book. I wrote it somewhere between 30 and 35 years ago, where I actually was trying to identify that moment in myself. And I was aware of it, but I was trying to identify it and try to figure out what my practice had to do with it. So with your permission, con tu permiso, okay. Already at birth, I was parted. See, this, Roshi is, this is what he's saying. And I was aware of it. Already at birth, there was a problem. It was even before birth that this happened. Already at birth, I was parted, not just from my mother, but body from mind, mind from its source. That's why I take up this soft blade of breath to cut me back into one. So the first part of that poem is what Katagiri Roshi is talking about. Already at birth, I was parted, not just from my mother, but body from mind, mind from its source. I was already in trouble. That was my experience, and that's why I wrote it that way. So ignorance had begun, and ignorance doesn't just mean that we're not aware of oneness, or we're not aware of non-duality, but that the state of our mind is what might be called not oneness or dualistic. And it's the state of our mind. It has nothing to do with whether we're aware of anything. It's the condition of our mind alone. And Roshi says that this occurs because of the movement of the mind. So Zen is a very interesting tradition, very interesting practice. And it's said in Zen that when we're fully engaged in Zazen, so when we're fully engaged in our meditation, there's no volition. There's no will. So volition or will means an inclination or a wish or an impulse to make something happen, right? It's basically one of the translations of, you know, the fourth skanda, one of the five skandhas. So in Zen, it said that when we're fully engaged in Zazen, there's no volition, there's no will. There's no inclination, there's no wish, there's no impulse, there's no energy to make something happen because we're fully engaged. We're actualizing Zazen. And in Zen understanding, where there's no volition, no karma is created. So Zazen is actually considered a karmaless act, an act that does not cause an effect. It's wholly itself, like in Genjo Koan, you know, death is a period to itself, life is a period to itself, because of the wholeness of each thing. And same with Zazen. That's his understanding. And so this is because the mind is not separated. The mind remains steady in what we call one-pointed concentration. So it hasn't moved, it hasn't wobbled, right? It hasn't separated out. And so if we understand this stillness of the mind, we can see that the stillness of the mind means there's no gap. There's no separation. There's no movement. So we could say mind is just like this. Okay, just like this. This is mind. Just this way. Not like your bed, but just like this. Okay, this better. Samurai stuff. Right. And what's really interesting, and I'm sure that you've all noticed this, is that mind can be just like this even when the body's moving. Because the fact that the body's moving does not mean that we've lost one-pointed concentration. In fact, sometimes when body and mind are completely one with, I'm not going to say each other, with themselves, that action is called actualization. That's when body and mind are completely one and together. So body can be moving and mind remains still and not separate. And that manifests Genjo Koan. I find that in my contemplation, that's pretty interesting. So this is why Dogen's teaching of Shikan Taza, Shikan, I've talked about this, Shikan means a wholehearted, entire, no gap, no separation. Shikan, that's our sitting in Shikan Taza. Shikan, so no separation. Ta means touch, and Za is abbreviation of Zazen. So a wholeheartedly Zazen. It's why it's so important, because it means to sit in Zazen without any separation in the mind from any cause, including volition, which is why there's no creation of karma from that. So Shikan Taza is sit just like this, just that way, 100%. And when we allow the mind to settle down and not follow its usual, favorite TV program, you know, its usual narrative, then the mind and the body together can sit. just like this, whole, complete. When in Buddhism it says that you are already enlightened, and we suffer because we don't know what we are, when mind sits just like this, that's an opportunity for what we are to be expressed in the world, whether or not the body is moving. So as long as we follow any thought or feeling or physical sensation in our body, for example, when we're sitting zazen, then we know that our practice can improve a little bit. This is why Suzuki Roshi said, right, you're perfect just the way you are and you can use a little improvement. So he's acknowledging our basic nature and he's pointing out to the fact that, you know, our mind does all these kind of dualistic dances. And Dogen's experience, and not only Dogen's experience, is that when we allow the mind to settle and we become one as body and mind, right, become one as body and mind, that narrative does drop away. And this phrase is, Renee and I were talking about this, right, Shinjin Datsuratku, body, mind, drop off. And then there's only, doesn't mean that no one's sitting on the pillow, right? It means that body and mind are just like this. And we can't will it into existence. We can't force it into existence. But what we can do, and what retreats do, and what many of you, I think, I hope, but what I think happens is that when we nourish the internal environment of our mind, it's more likely that body-mind will be just like this. That stillness starts to pervade bigger and bigger, and you can start to sense it as you sit in zazen, and then suddenly it becomes more quiet, kind of spacious, and this, as I mentioned the other day, kind of samadhi state, but that comes from cultivating it. And just one little clue from my own long life of practice. One of the things that can help us center and locate ourselves in that way is to hear the breath as we're... So we often think, follow the breath with the mind, but also sometimes when the mind goes off, if you just hear your breath, it will bring you back. And once I was talking to Roshi and we were talking about samadhi states or something like that, and he said, when you go off, then what do you do? And I told him, and he said, increase the pressure in your throat and just emphasize the breath, not so the person next to you can hear it, but instead of go. And I did it, and I felt my hara move, I felt my belly move. So then I knew that, okay, that increased pressure actually contacted me right where my mind was supposed to be paying attention, except I got lost. So that was a great hint, and I wanted to mention it to you. So when we sit in this way, without any particular goal to get to by sitting in this way, this really allows the mind to do what Suzuki Roshi called resume its natural composure. This is a great phrase. Resume. That means it already is there. Resume its natural composure from which we wobbled. When I thought about the word composure, it's very interesting. It has the usual meaning of kind of tranquility and calm. You know, he's very composed, you know, very composure. And it also includes, of course, composition. So we can say that zazen is an activity whereby the natural, tranquil composition of the mind emerges. Right. The natural, tranquil, calm composition of the mind is allowed to emerge when we sit deeply in our zazen. Just think of it as like the whole sun, right, coming up out of the sky that's kind of clouded by our usual kind of mixed up thinking, you know, coming out of the fog. Right? We even say that, right? We have that phrase in English, right? I feel like I just came out of a fog. It means I just realized something. And in this case, we're talking about realizing the self. And when this happens, just like the sun comes out whole, it doesn't come out a little, the sun comes out gradually whole, then our wholeness emerges. We can actually have some experience of that. And spaciousness is part of it, just like the sun in this kind of big sky. And also there's profound tranquility or peace. I got interested in preparing this talk thinking about this word peace. So I wanted to know a little more about it. And usually, when I thought about the word peace, I thought, okay, it means kind of, tranquility and a mind that's not disturbed. You say, I'm very peaceful right now, so the mind is not disturbed. But when I looked into the word, to my great surprise and my great delight, it also has linguistic roots to the idea of being something that's fastened, something that's held together and concentrated. Isn't that interesting? So peace is something that's not separate. Isn't that interesting? I find that just absolutely great. It holds itself together. It's fastened to itself. It's not fastened to something else. It's fastened to itself. It has that kind of concentration. Concentros. It means like with the center. So we can understand peace as something that it has a center that holds it together. It doesn't fly all over the place. And when the mind has that kind of a quality to it, then it maintains its tranquility that expands. There's actually a sense of equanimity as the world meets it because it's held together. It's not knocked apart. And then, of course, it's very calm. And something else emerges. As I explored that in myself, a very natural feeling of connection and compassion emerges because there's no separation. And so when a mind is in that kind of state, and people say, oh, I just melted, my heart just opened. Well, that's right. That's actually a manifestation and an expression of a mind like that, which we can experience in our zazen. And not just in zazen, but that's what I'm focusing on right now. So in the Judeo-Christian tradition, because it's not like, Zen people are the only people who know anything about this, both sides of it. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, what we call oneness is sometimes referred to as the source or the source of life or God. These are kind of words pointing to this oneness. And the distance from God or alienation from God is called sin. That's not usually talked about in that way. One way that Jews and Christians have traditionally defined sin is separation from one. I find that fascinating. Separation from one. Alienation from oneness. Alienation from God or the source. And in Buddhism, the distance from oneness is called avidya. Sanskrit word avidya, which means ignorance. Which, of course, is the root of greed and aggression and delusion, which is created by karma, which is created by the movement of the mind. It's very important to notice that even though Katagiri Roshi says it's the movement of the mind before we're aware of it, it doesn't mean we can't become aware of it. So even if it's already happening, because we have a practice of awareness, we actually can become aware of it. And then we can do something about it. That's why our practice is so important. You say, oh, I feel so unpeaceful. I feel so at odds. I'm just angry all the time. I just want to kill Donald Trump. Right, okay, good, fine. My mind goes to Yiddish. Zeigesund is what I could say. Live and be healthy. But it's not. You're not going to kill Donald Trump. So let's get real here. What can I do? And this is a question that gets asked a lot. And the answer is, come back. And we know how to come back because the mind has moved, and it's moved into a dangerous direction. So both Western traditions and Eastern Buddhist traditions acknowledge that where there is no oneness, there can be no peace because of separation. And the traditions also agree that that peace is definitely possible in human life when we return to the source, as is talked about in the Judeo-Christian tradition, also in Taoism, and when we return to one. So, again, the key to peace is non-separation. You think about that personally, you think about it as a matter of consciousness, and think about it politically. Think about what that might mean, what that might look like in the world, if all the division disappeared, and all the things that foster division disappeared, and non-separation was what we felt, or what was happening. That's quite a different world. In Judaism, some of you may know this, but in Judaism, there's something called Tikkun Olam. Tikkun Olam means to repair the broken world. Right, to repair. That means to bring it back to one. And in Zen, Tikkun Olam, repair the broken world, is accomplished through living the four great vows to save all beings, transform delusions, become intimate with all things, and live that way. It's the same thing from two different ways of thinking about it or talking about it. So you know that we've been chanting, I don't know if you know the word in Japanese, Sandokai. It's the identity of relative and absolute. It's the third chant that we've been doing here, and we do, you know, some of us every day, and you know, every week or like that. And the Sandokai was written by our Chinese ancestor, actually. His name in Japanese is Kito Kisen, and in Chinese his name is Shito Shichian. Became Sakito Kisen in Japanese. And it's chanted all around the world. And one line that's very, very powerful in that chant, at least for me, is that each thing comes out from the root like branches and leaves from a tree. It's such a simple and expressive and kind of beautifully poetic line. Each thing comes out from the root like branches and leaves from a tree. And then the next line says, cause and effect must return to the great reality. That is very interesting. Something comes out, but something has to go back. So what is Shito Shichian, Sakito Kisen, what is he saying? The image of each thing comes out from the root is a way of expressing the idea that there is a source of all things. Things don't just appear. There's actually, in Buddhism, there's a chain of causation that brings things into existence. So, you know, that's part of what Akadigiri Roshi is talking about, is that chain of causation that creates karma. So there is this chain of causation. So each thing comes out from the root, says there's a source, and sometimes we call the source God, and sometimes we call it emptiness, and sometimes we call it nature, and sometimes we call it karma. And maybe other things, like, it's your fault. That's another way we have of identifying what we think is the source. If you hadn't said that, I wouldn't have done that. It's your fault. This is ignorance par excellence. So this each thing comes out from the root, like branches a leaf from a tree, that's talking about emergence. Cause and effect must return to the great reality is talking about return. And this is a very, very important point, because in that line, Sakito Kisen is saying that there must be a cessation of karma. Cause and effect must return. Cause and effect is karma. Cause and effect must return to the great reality. So, Sakito Kisen is saying that if you truly want the identity of the relative and absolute, if you want your boundless nature and your relative nature to be able to truly be one, then we have to become one. Cause and effect must return to the great reality. And all acts of separation must return to the great reality. And that means in ourselves, and think about it, as I said, the possibility of that happening in the world. The world moving to non-separation. Now think about ourselves again. Ourselves moving to non-separation so that there can be a peace. And I think it's pretty safe to say that the great reality is non-duality, is non-separation, or, you know, as we call it, kind of oneness. So you've heard me say, and quote Dogen, that our practice is the practice of great ease and joy. And we all laugh about it because our legs hurt. Okay. Fine. So, for Zazen to be, or a practice to be the Dharma gate, the place we enter of great ease and joy, it means that the mind is on its way to returning, right, to the great reality among its crews, you know, among the reality shows, which is like cruising for a bruising, right? You know, we watch the reality show, either the one in our, you know, we broadcast in our mind, or the one, you know, on television or whatever you watch. And, you know, we learn to be kind in Zazen, so we don't judge ourselves, you know, because we have our favorite channels, or, you know, we notice them, but we also know that they don't help us. They're just part of the entertainment package on the cruise. We paid for it, you know, and we're going to pay for it. But fortunately, we also know about the truth of impermanence, which means they came, they can go. And we have a way to take care of that. So there's a good reason not to worry. We can just get back to our practice. We can't get away from them anyway. My teacher Kong Rishi used to say, right, not enlightenment apart from delusion, enlightenment right in the middle of it. Right? No mud, no lotus. There it is. Very simple. You want to have enlightenment apart from delusion? How's that going to happen? Not the case. So in our practice, we have a way of reminding ourselves that this can happen, and it's called the second vow. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. And, you know, maybe some people say it every day, every week, but there it is. There's the reminder. Delusions causing all the suffering that come from ignorance, that create karma, I vow to transform those delusions. And we have a way to transform them. It's called our practice. And it means that we know that that we can do it. Branches and leaves that come out from the root can return to the root. And we see it, you know, right now in autumn all the time. All the leaves fall out from the tree. They drop off, each in their time, according to the conditions that make it possible for it to drop off. Think about your mind now, right? Cultivating those conditions that allow those troubling leaves to drop off. They fall to the ground, and then they are naturally composted into very fertile soil. And other things can grow, and the tree can grow. And it's the same with our delusions. Mm-hmm. Its delusions can drop away, as Dogen talks about, Shinjin Datsaraku, and suddenly it's possible for those things to nourish a lotus blooming. That's our lives. So I wanted to offer the teaching, this teaching tonight, because I felt so happy to think about Katagiri Roshi talking about this. And also to just say, you've been practicing very deeply, you've been practicing very well, very quietly, very silently, and you've been expressing in one way or another this profound aspiration that your life means something in a world that is so desperately separated to the point of self-destruction. And so I thought this teaching might help you have some confidence that we actually can do something with the very sticking places that we carry around and we think of as our minds, by simply practicing in a way that chooses to consciously help the mind return to stillness and chooses not to follow the leader that will take us away and cause that mind shiver to take place, we actually can make that choice. And if I'm going to tie it to last night's talk about a sincere being, practicing sincere being is the foundation of that activity. Being willing, just be willing to die to the false self. Be so sincere that you're willing and determined to face what you really are. No place to hide, no need to protect yourself from what you really are, because what you really are is just pretty darn good. And keep returning to that stillness of mind. And when we do, we can touch peace right here in this life. And if we can touch peace, we can bring peace to the world that needs us desperately, really desperately, as you know. And maybe I'll just end. For some reason, Jimmy Stewart just walked into the room and just say, "That's a wonderful life." So I don't know how we got into my Dharma talk, but thank you, Jimmy. Okay, so, well, there it is. I guess that's what I wanted to say to you today. So, but let's chant the four vows.